You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. Today we are in Etna.
Cozze citene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci cora, cozze citene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci cora, se non mangiano le femmine.
Vincenzo! Noi Vincenzo per la storia, ricordatelo, il triste! Sei tu il caduto di te stesso,
Carlo! That was the sound of some Vincenzo Nibali fans in Cefalù at the start of stage four. A stage that finished at Mount Etna. Lots of support for Nibali. That makes redundant my usual opening question, Lionel. Where are we?
Where are we? Well, we're at Etna. We're in a bar.
There was a spoiler out there.
Yeah, we're surrounded by, fortunately, cold lava. There's not been an eruption. We'll probably get away with it, I think, now.
Smells a bit, though, doesn't it?
It's stunning, isn't it, though?
It smells a bit.
Yeah, it does, but it is stunning.
We did reckon that in our new Maserati that we've taken delivery of, we could outrun the lava if there was to be an eruption.
Well, and I also said that we'd be safe in the press room because the lava presumably won't have an accreditation badge, so it won't be allowed in.
Yes, you did say that. That's correct. They're very strict with that. Well, first sort of showdown of the Giro, proper showdown on the mountain here.
Water pistols at dawn, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know what we expected, but there was a headwind, bit of a phony war up there, up the slopes. Give us a tale of the tap-up, please, Lionel.
I will, Richard, yeah. Stage 4, 181 kilometres from Cefalù to Etna. It was won by Jan Palanch of the UAE Emirates team. He won a couple of years ago at Abetone in a similar sort of stage, got into the break and held on the climb, but he said in the press conference afterwards that this was much harder, not just because the climb is harder and less regular than Abetone, but also because of the strong headwind. It was a nice late birthday present for the Slovenian rider. He was 25 3 days ago. The pink jersey has passed from Quick Steps Fernando Gaviria to Quick Steps Bob Jungels.
As predicted by me last night.
As predicted at your birthday
dinner.
Says with
a mouthful of Arancino.
Well, he was desperate to point it out, wasn't he? I mean, nothing was going to stop him.
Not going to let that one pass.
So, very similar to last year in a way, because Jungels took the pink jersey at Sestola from his Quick Step teammate Gianluca Brambilla, and he held it for 3 days then. Looking at the route, well, we can speculate a bit later on how long Jungels will hold the pink jersey, but he is in pink. Polanch's stage win was impressive. He got into a break with three other riders, Eugenio Alafaci of Trek, Jacques Janssen van Rensburg of Dimension Data and Pavel Brut of Gazprom. Their lead was 8 minutes 14 at its maximum. On the climb itself, it went one way and the other, didn't it? At one point it looked like Polanch might get caught, then it looked like he'd stay away, then it looked like he might get caught. He held on to win. Behind him, there weren't really fireworks, were there? Pierre Rolland had a bit of an attack, didn't last terribly long. Paolo Tirolongo, Sicilian rider, Igor Anton and Jesper Hansen also made moves. But probably the most impressive move of the day was Ilnur Zakarin, who recovered from a crash on a tight right-hand corner before the climb, attacked and gained some seconds. He'd lost a few seconds a couple of days ago, gained those back. One of the other crash victims was Stephen Kruiswijk of Lotto NL Jumbo. He was a bit bashed up at the finish. We'll hear from him later in the episode. So Jungels is in pink. Geraint Thomas won the sprint for third behind Zakarin, and he got a little time bonus, so he's at 6 seconds. Then pretty much everybody else is at 10 seconds. That's Adam Yates, Vincenzo Nibali, Quintana, Tom Dumoulin, Mikel Landa, Thibaut Pino, etc. The Ciclamino jersey is still held by Andre Greipel. Polanch now has the King of the Mountains jersey, and Bob Jungels also has the white jersey. Sad news for BMC Racing's Rowan Dennis. He is out after his crash 2 days ago.
The Etna stage today, it could have produced fireworks, as you said, it didn't, but it was interesting as the riders fanned across the road and there was this truce almost. You just realised, looking at that group, how many top riders there are in the race, as if we need a reminder. We see every day the calibre riders leading the teams, and you realise what an open and strong race this could be. But that was really, it was fascinating to watch them almost lining up across the road at one point after Nibali's, what I'll call a TV attack, I think it was. Was that disaster?
That's exactly what Matt White said, a TV attack.
Right. Yeah. That was certainly for the local fans, I think. Who else impressed? I thought Pino was quite frisky. Geraint Thomas looked good. Demoulin had a little go as well. But it's a long way to go. Jungels is in pink. He's a sort of B-list contender. I had a chat with him yesterday, actually, which we'll play in an episode later this week. You know, he'll be pleased to be in pink. Better on his shoulders than perhaps one of the real outstanding favourites for overall victory. And you mentioned Lionel, how long could he keep it? He could keep it for 10 days or so now.
Well, yeah, I mean, we've got the time trial at Montefalco coming up at the end of this block of racing, haven't we? Bob Jungels was sixth in Chianti's time trial last year.
The wine trial.
The wine trial, of course, yeah. The field last year, you know, maybe wasn't a stellar time trial field. I mean, Fabio Cancellara was there. It was terrible rain, if you remember, Richard, and there was that tricky descent, wasn't there? So Jungels, you know, he is a rider very similar to Tom Dumoulin, really. He can climb well and can time trial well. So he could go very deep in this Giro, and having finished sixth overall last year and won the white jersey last year, you know, he could equal or even better that this time round. Looking very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that it was a bit of a missed opportunity for some of the climbers, really. Or not, I mean, given the conditions, it was very hard to attack. It must have been very hard to attack. That said, just talking to some of the directors sportifs and riders after the race, opinion was slightly split on that. Paolo Slongo, Vincenzo Nibali's coach, said that, well, it's not really an excuse to headwind because it was a road that climbed in hairpin bends. So, you know, one stretch was against the wind, one stretch was with the wind. And Matt White, certainly Orica Scott's director sportif, so Adam Yates' director sportif, thought that it was a pretty poor show by some of the climbers, and it was pretty defensive. In fact, shall we hear from, well, let's hear first from Adam Yates this morning in Cefalù, sounding very confident before the stage, and Matt White afterwards, having watched Adam Yates ride into third place overall.
All's going good so far. First mountain stage today. I don't actually know the climb, but on paper it looks like a tough one. And the wind's going to be pretty strong today, but a big headwind, so might be a bit defensive on the climb, but we'll just wait and see. It's going to be one of those, isn't it? Like, nobody really wants to take control, because if you take a jersey, you're going to have to ride for the next couple of days, and you know, that last week, that's on everyone's mind. So, yeah, I'm not too sure. We'll have to wait and see, like I said, but myself personally, I feel good, so let's see.
I think the big leaders didn't want the jersey. It's pretty clear. Obviously, Nibali, those guys did their best to chase there today and put in a little bit of attack for the fans in the final. Mm-hmm. But, obviously Nairo doesn't want the jersey. Mm-hmm. The movie star were very, very quiet today, and other teams as well. So we were keen to look for the stage win, but we weren't going to put everything. You know, we're one of many favourites, but it was there for the taking, that's for sure.
So that was Matt White pretty much accusing Movistar of having ridden pretty defensively. I went straight to Movistar's direct sportive team manager, Eusebio Unzue, and put that to him that they really should have been a bit more aggressive today. Here's what he said.
No era hoy un objetivo.
It's not that he didn't want the jersey. It just wasn't an objective today. The goal was not to lose time on any of the rivals, and we did that, except for Zakarin gaining a few seconds.
Another thing, chaps, that Unzue talked about tonight was Zakarin gaining time, and I think it really dawned on Unzue today how many good time trialists there are in this race, and we know how much time trialing there is in this. Well, there's some wine trialing, and then there's some time trialing. So we've got in Spoleto the wine trial. That is, how far is it? It's 39.8 kilometres, and then we've got the even longer one. Oh, no, sorry, slightly shorter, on the last day, Monza. So, you know, the opportunities are going to be fairly limited for the climbers to gain. Well, I think they need, on someone like Bob Jungels or one of the best time trialists in the race, Tom Dumoulin, someone like Nairo Quintana probably needs to gain 4 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes over the course of those two time trials. And today it's an opportunity gone already, isn't it?
Well, Quintana seemed very reluctant to really get involved in anything today. He was following. And even when Nibali attacked, it was one of his teammates, Andre Amador, who chased him down rather than Quintana responding himself. So he's obviously, he is sort of right. He does tend to get stronger as in every Grand Tour he's ridden, I think he's tended to get stronger as the race has gone on. Quintana has just got through these opening days with barely a mention. We've barely mentioned Quintana. It's
Well, that's how you win Grand Tours, isn't it? I was just going to counter the argument there. Yeah, we want to see explosive racing, perhaps, and, you know, not here on Etna. That's the wrong word to use, maybe. Don't want to tempt fate until we get down the bottom. But we want to see them all go head-to-head, but it is only day four of a three-week race. I know there's now a big gap between this point and the really serious mountains. There's kind of opportunities for a bit of shadow boxing, several hilly stages, medium mountain stages. There's Europa, of course, before you get into the proper mountains in the last week. But if you were going to say, how do you win this Giro, you do it very quietly and you get busier as the race goes on. Because I'm just looking back at last year, probably this time last year, we were talking about Dumoulin. Maybe he could go all the way, you know, with his time trialing strength.
There wasn't quite the same amount of time trialing last year, was there? I mean, that's the difference. And the fact that there are so many good time trials, they might be in a position, riders like Quintana, where they're expecting, waiting for, hoping that five or six good time trialists collapse in the mountains. And that's a really, really dangerous position to be in. And also Quintana, you know, you have to remember that he's targeting the double, the Giro and the Tour. So, you know, I was talking about that, had an interesting conversation yesterday with one of the Sky coaches, Zabi Artecho, who used to work for Movistar, and you know, just talking about the difficulty of that double, and I think everyone agrees that you need to go in slightly undercooked to the first Grand Tour, and Quintana has not raced a lot before the Giro, but he might find himself, you know, with a lot of ground to make up by the time his best form does start to kick in when we get to the high mountains.
We'd expect Pino as well to be a stronger time trialist than Quintana, wouldn't we?
Marginally, I would think so. I would think he could gain a minute or a minute and a half on Quintana over the two time trials, at least.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Yeah, I born in Sicily and come back here with the Giro is amazing. I left Sicily after 12 years when I was still young. Many people came yesterday, say me, remember me. It's a long time, it's hard to remember, but I like that, it was emotional.
And these people you've just been talking to and taking pictures with, are they family or friends?
They're friends because they came from where I born, because it's a small town, it's just 12,000 people, you know, it's really small, and they came just for me. They was really close to me when I was really young, 7 years old.
And how well do you know Etna, both the mountain, the volcano, and the climb as a cyclist?
I don't know, really. I went there for a school trip when I was so young, 6 years old, you know, just with the school.
That was Salvatore Puccio, the Team Sky rider, one of four Sicilians in the race. Daniel spoke to him at the start in Cefalù this morning. Before that, we heard from Science of Sport. We are very grateful to Science of Sport for their sponsorship. A reminder that you can get 20% off all Science of Sport products at sciencesport.com if you enter the code CPOD20. That's CPOD20. This little bit was missing from the podcast a couple of nights ago because we lost a chunk. In traveling from Sardinia to here, we misplaced a bit of the podcast.
We did. I dropped it somewhere in the sea between Sardinia and Sicily, and it meant that we had a jump in time. There was supposed to be an extra little bit in the middle there. But
we maybe release it at some point, just on its own, just for people's, because I'm sure.
You know what else happening?
Hang on, something is happening.
You know what else happened in Cefalù this morning?
What?
I had a granita.
Did you? Oh, you had a granita as well.
A breakfast for ice cream for breakfast, reference to those who haven't heard our Kilometre Zero, with sponsorship liaison David Luxon, a.k.a. Bob Sugar, Dave the Deal.
There he is, he's sitting at the next table chuckling. We're getting a bit excited there because somebody is in our midst, somebody, and there's been a lot of requests for this person to appear on the podcast again, but I don't think he can get in.
I think the sponsorship liaison needs to earn his crust and go in.
I think he's trying
find
to...
Him. He's definitely out there.
He's out there. Anyway, what were we going to talk about this section, Daniel?
Well, there was quite a bit to clean up, wasn't there? Not least, well, Stephen Kruiswijk's wounds had to be cleaned up at the finish line. He was very unhappy bunny as he came over the line. He'd crashed, and when a number of riders went the wrong way at the bottom of the climb near Nicolosi, and Kruiswijk came down in a crash. I think Zakarin came down as well, or got held up. And so the Dutch challenge at this Giro is very strong, isn't it? We know Dumoulin, Mollema, and Kruiswijk all going for general classification. and I spoke to Kruiswijk and Dumoulin at the finish. Obviously conflicting fortunes for those two Dutchmen today.
What exactly happened, I don't know. A few guys missed the corner at high speed to the right. Certainly, I hit the deck, and I think I only have some abrasions on my left side, and hopefully that's it, and we'll see.
It wasn't really possible to make any differences, so that's it. And then you end up with a bigger group. Yeah. I think if we had tailwind today, then for sure some guys would have attacked. But it's also very early in Giro yet. So if you take the victory here, you have the pink jersey and you have to defend it for a long time. So I think it's too early. Together with the headwind and being it so early, then you get quite a boring climb maybe. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, if you make the third week that hard, then everybody is a little bit scared then to spend too much energy. So it was a good day.
So, Daniel, did you see Stephen Kruiswijk's wounds when he got back to the bus? Because I had the misfortune. The whole of the back of his shorts were all torn open. Two big, red, bloody wounds right on the softest part of his bottom.
I didn't inspect his bottom, Lionel, but he did have a nasty, nastily grazed knee.
I also didn't inspect his bottom, but it was hanging out of his shorts, so I couldn't miss it, really.
Look who it is. Look who it is. It's Ciro Scognamiglio from Gazzetta dello Sport. Hello, Ciro.
Listeners, I have tears in my eyes. Unfortunately, you can't see me now, but I'm really proud to be back here, and I can't contain my emotion. Also, my English that is not, as you know, excellent. Maybe it will be even worse, because for me, it's even difficult to speak. Thank you. Happy. I'm so happy.
Okay, Ciro. Yes. Well, we're happy as well, and lots of our listeners will be happy because there've been a lot of requests for where is Ciro. Has been trending on Twitter, that question. Where is Ciro?
Listeners, fortunately, nothing has changed in my mind and in cycling. As usual, my priority is not this cycling race, but certainly other stuff. You know that we are very lucky because in this edition, edition of the Giro is really historical. Why? You know, maybe because it's the 100th edition? Yes, but this is not the most important topic. The most important topic, Sardinia and Sicily together in the same edition. So a lot of sand, a lot of beaches, and a lot of beautiful photos. And today in Gazzetta, we published a marvelous picture of my soul sister Pippo Pozzato that certainly in the rest of the day he went to the beach. I must confess, dear listeners, when I can in the Giro, I go to the beach every day.
If you're listening to this at home and playing Ciro Bingo, I think you've got full house.
Ciro, you're usually good at clearing up little things, incidents that we're not really quite sure about. There was an incident in the race today. Javier Moreno pulled the jersey of an Italian rider on Team Sky, another Italian rider on Team Sky, Diego Rosa, yeah, and had words with him. I actually tried to find out from Rosa exactly what happened. I spoke to him at the finish line. Here's what he said.
What happened when the Bahrain rider, Moreno, pulled you back?
Yeah, I'm a stupid man and nothing. I think he can all can see in the TV and nothing.
Do you know what it was about?
It's a stress moment of the race, and if the guy push the other guy out of the road with the on the public,
so it's a bit dangerous.
Yeah, and after the rider drop and crash and broke the neck.
To be honest, I couldn't really make much sense of Diego Rosa's version of events. He talked about a crash. I've been trying to find out from Team Sky exactly what went on and exactly what that was about. Ciro, do you have any idea at all
about this quarrel, about this polemic? Yeah, well, I have the possibility to talk to Moreno immediately after the stage. He told me that it was a lot of confusion and a lot of confusion to take the best position in the peloton. And he told me that Rosa gave him a punch on his back. And so for this reason, he had this reaction. I haven't yet the possibility to speak to Rosa, but this is what Moreno told me.
Well, that must have happened quite a bit earlier in the race, if that's correct, because certainly we had a good view. In fact, you commented, Lionel, on how good the camera angles were on the bunch as they started to climb Etna. Some fantastically close shots of the bunch. And we had a pretty good view of the incident happening and the build-up to it, and it seemed to come out of nowhere. So if something happened, it must have happened earlier in the stage.
Or it could have happened just off-camera as Sky Riders were moving up past, because there were a little knot of Bardet and Merida riders there, weren't there? So maybe he gave him, maybe he did give him a whack on the back, just, you know, to say he was coming through, or move out of the way, or whatever. But yeah, we don't know Rosa's side of the story yet. So
well, we kind of do, but Rosa.
Well, we don't know whether Rosa would deny, laying a hand on Moreno. So we probably, you know,
talking of
six and one, half a dozen on the other. Possibly.
Talking of Bahrain, Merida, isn't it time for
il lupo? Che conosceva ogni angolo della provincia, al rientro ci controllava. The wolf, who knew every corner of the province, checked us out as we came home.
Now, Ciro, we heard there in the clip, we heard Vincenzo Nibali referring to il lupo, the wolf. Famously, that is Vincenzo Nibali's father. I hope that you were going to point him out to me at the finish today, because I think he was around, but we lost each other, didn't we, in the confusion after the finish?
Yes. Could I reveal something special to our friends of the podcast? I think it's a good occasion, because unlikely I have to write a lot these days, and not today, and I have to go, but I can reveal something special. I had two months ago, more or less, a good conversation with Vincenzo Nibali. You know that Nibali already wrote two books, one about his life, more or less, and one about the last edition of the Giro d'Italia. And maybe in the future he could write another book, who knows? But I talk with Vincenzo with my heart, and I ask him, Vincenzo, please never ask me to write a book with you and for you. Otherwise, I'm going no longer talk to you any longer. You don't never ask me to write a book for you and with you. Never, Vincenzo. Please. And I think that he understood, and now I'm confident.
Before you go, how do you judge his performance so far? Or his form so far?
In my opinion, not bad. His season so far, certainly he was able to win the Tour of Croatia, but his season so far hasn't been so good. But today, more or less, I had the impression that he was more or less on the level of the other main favorites. And if we remember last year, that in the very first mountain stage was a little bit later in Roccaraso, if you remember, he attacked, but then Dumoulin attacked himself, and then Nibali lost some seconds. In my opinion, I had the impression that he could be in a better shape comparing to last year.
I'm Simon Mottram. I'm the founder and chief executive of RAFA. The ultimate cycling jersey pre-RAFA, it would probably be either the San Rafael jersey from 1963, which Jacques Anquetil wore, red, white, pale blue, beautiful script logo, somewhat linked to our brand, but that's not why it's beautiful. I just think it works fantastically well. I have a soft spot for Mappe, like lots of people. The other jersey I always really loved was the BP Peugeot jersey that Simpson wore and many other people wore, just so simple and so dramatic.
The RAFA Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
My name is Martina, and I work in Rifugio Sapienza place in Monte Etna at Bar Esagonal.
We've had some eruption on the volcano this year, but they haven't been very dramatic. It's been nothing like 2001, when we got completely destroyed. The lava was erupting 200 meters from where we are. It went nearly all the way down to Nicolosi at the bottom, and we were right in its path. It always takes you by surprise. On any day, at any time, you never know what might happen. From one minute to the next, there might be an eruption, an earthquake, anything. We've had eruptions that have lasted half an hour and eruptions that have lasted for months. Usually the only warning sign is a rumbling from inside the volcano.
Solitamente si sentono dei boati, solo questo.
Calm down, Lionel. After hearing that, he's looking as nervous as he was in the airport the other night.
My eyes have widened. Can we wrap this up? It's time to wrap this up. Let's go.
This could erupt at any time. Well, here we are sitting. We're surrounded by black old lava, which falls all the way down, really, 20 kilometers down the climb. Incredible. So it does erupt on a regular basis. Could happen at any moment.
Well, get on with it then.
Okay, what else do we have to clear up from today's stage?
A few good performances that perhaps I wouldn't say we didn't expect, but a few sort of outliers in that group of favourites. It was good to see Davide Formolo there, the Cannondale Drapac rider. Hugh Carthy looked very good. Hate to have to keep pointing this out. We've pointed it out at least once before, but this week, or on Friday, it is the anniversary of Cannondale, or the second year anniversary of Cannondale's last World Tour win. That came courtesy of Davide Formolo in La Spezia at a similar point in the Giro d'Italia. And I spoke to Formolo this morning actually just about how much sort of pressure is on the team to break that drought.
Just first of all, how have the first 3 days of the Giro gone for you?
Oh, that's nice. I think today we have the first test. First 3 day was nice, just stay in the wheel, sit and drink and save energy. Now I think we have a big test. All the climber is with all the climber. We have a really steep climb in the final. Should be head wind, so the wind can stop the race a bit. But the climbers is so steep and so long, so offshore will be a big difference in the top.
Have you looked at the climb, Davide? Do you know the climb?
Yeah, look, just a few times. I've been there for altitudinal camp on the heat now, just a few weeks ago. Yeah, it's steep in the beginning, after Nicolosi, they see the town. It's pretty steep, and then they're all getting wide, and it's keeping really around 8-10% all the way. There are a few times where it's a little bit easier, but after the little bit descending, getting harder.
And Davide, on Friday, it's going to be 2 years since your stage win in the Giro, and it's 2 years since the team's last World Tour win. Yeah. Do you talk about that in the team? Do you feel a lot of pressure because of that in the team?
But we just do our best every race, and then we will see at the end of the race what was the results. I mean, if you do your best every race, you do your best training, you do your best in a race, you can lose nothing more. No?
Today would be a good day to end the 2 years, end the drought.
Yeah, for me, and we have a really strong team as well. Like, if you look at the start list, we have Michael Wulff, we have John Dombrowski, Davide Villela, Alex House, and Hugh Carthy. A lot of good climbers, so today can be a nice day for the team.
Well, you can't say they didn't have a go today, Cannondale, because Pierre Rolland was up the road for quite a long time, never really looked like he was getting enough of a gap. Perhaps needed some people to come after him, but perhaps also the fact that nobody went after him, and because he went so far from the finish, a sign that nobody really sees Pierre Rolland as a real danger for the overall. So he obviously paid for his effort in the wind. It was always going to be very difficult to go from that far out, wasn't it?
Yeah, and just in that clip, Formula listed the climbers that they've got in this race. They really should come away with something, shouldn't they? I mean, they've got a lot of guys who are capable of winning stages on hilly days, like Formula himself, Rolland, Alex Howes, Rusty Woods. So they're
Tommy Elter-Slechter.
And Carthy as well. So they're pretty well stacked.
They are. And they are here for stage wins. I mean, Rolland is not. I think they've been pretty explicit about that they're here for stage wins. And
well, yeah, but I mean, just because they say they're here for stage wins, Pierre Rolland has a pedigree, but I was making the point that his fellow riders are not exactly leaping on his wheel thinking
it's a funny one,
a
that,
dangerous
isn't it?
One to,
because I thought the same about Zakarin when he went, that he's an outside threat. I mean, a year ago we were talking about him as a real contender for the Giro. Hasn't perhaps had the same build up this year to excite people to the same extent, but he is nevertheless a dangerous rider.
Well, yeah, particularly as he was still well placed, wasn't he, when he crashed out very badly
last year? Yeah,
yeah, and then he came back and had a good Tour de France. So I mean, he really is an out.
We had the terrible time trial. Fell off a few times in the time trial.
That's right.
Just had rotten luck at the Giro last year.
Yeah,
and has started with a bit of bad luck this time, but it's obviously going very well.
Just a word on Polanch, the stage winner, because I sometimes feel that, you know, he's on a day like today. Exploits like that kind of get written off fairly quickly or kind of glossed over fairly quickly, but that was a really impressive ride. He said in the press conference that he was worried that the group that got away was only four riders, quite a long time to get a lot of stage to get through before getting to the bottom of the climb, only four of them to do that work, and yet he was still strong enough to pull away from those other three on the climb. And as we said at the very start, you know, that gap was 3 minutes with around 10 kilometres to go, and then he lost a minute of it in 5 kilometres, and then it was chipping down a little bit. And you know, as they get towards the top of the climbs, the time gaps, you know, how reliable are they, the numbers that we see on the screen? It's sometimes difficult to tell. I had this, particularly when they showed the long shot of the finish straight, I had a sort of horrible thought that maybe Zakarin or even the next group were going to come round the corner, and if they'd had him in their sights, it might have been a very different story. But an impressive win by Polanch, and one that they really planned for, because Team UAE were here in this region, weren't they, Daniel, in some point start of last month, doing a lot of training and recceing. And he said in the press conference how well he knows the climb and how well he knew the stage leading up to it.
Yeah, and a massive result obviously for that team. It's a new team this year, or it's a team that was formed on the basis of, or from the ashes really, of Lampre Merida they were last year. And I know there's a lot of, well, there's some friction behind the scenes. There's a bit of wrangling going on with Merida, who were their former bike sponsors, who have now teamed up with Bahrain. Merida will maybe tell you about that in the next few days or in the next couple of weeks. Could be an interesting story developing there, but yeah, it's a team that obviously came to the Giro with stage wins very much the priority, and I don't think realistically they believe Rui Costa can win the race. So,
well, he lost a fair bit of time today.
Time, yeah,
he's
today.
Really the biggest name not to have been in that front group. I think I haven't got in front of me exactly how much he lost, but it was over a minute and a half. Something
yeah,
like that.
So they'll be thrilled, and I think they've got more opportunities. They will have more opportunities with Valerio Conti, I particularly expect to go well, and target stage wins, especially in the medium mountains.
Yeah, well, Valerio Conti finished ahead of Rui Costa today. In the part of the podcast that was lost the other night, I reintroduced Pedlar de Charme, which we're relaunching. Not sure that Planche would be a contender for that. He was a bit ragged up the mountain. Lionel,
yeah,
a sight, I mean, that Lionel recognised.
Yeah, I mean, the body language was, he was going an awful lot faster than me, but that's my climbing style. Zigzagging and pedalling.
It was
not,
old
not so
school,
much
wasn't
square,
it? It looked like
but
a sort of 50s throwback almost. But we are looking for your nominations for Pedlar de Charme. A few came in today when we sent a tweet out. We're trying to make it more interactive this year. We're taking nominations. We're going to have a vote on maybe Thursday evening. If we get four nominations, have a vote. You decide who wins Pedlar de Charme. We've got lovely new Rafa designed and made T-shirts to present. We'll be offering T-shirts to our listeners as well at some point. And send in your nominations. A reminder that it's not about winning Pedlar de Charme. It's about, well, it's very broad, but it's about elegance, class. A lot of nominations actually today for Fernando Gaviria, who was a pink jersey and lost it with good grace and a big smile.
Very nice pink socks he had on as well, I noticed. For that alone, surely deserves a nomination.
Actually, should we just quickly, very, very quickly hear from Fernando Gaviria at his press conference yesterday in... where were we yesterday? We were near
Cefalu.
Palermo.
Cefalu.
Curious little thing...
Well, that's where we were yesterday as well.
Curious little thing. There's trouble. Lionel's giving Richard the death stare. Just a curious little thing about where he won in Cagliari. He won on Via Roma. I think we mentioned this in the podcast. And I asked him yesterday at his press conference whether he was aware of this fact. Obviously, Via Roma has not been particularly kind to him. He was poised to win Milan-San Remo a couple of years ago, crashed, and then didn't go too well this year. Anyway, here's what he said.
Disco, sabía que ayer has ganado en la Via Roma a Cagliari. ¿Qué te hace pensar?
Que me trae mala fortuna.
there was Gaviria saying in Spanish that Via Roma owed him a favour. Not the right Via Roma, the wrong Via Roma, but still.
Yeah, it's not the same Via Roma, is it? But it's an evocative old name, isn't it?
A few nominations also for Pedro de Charme for Lucas Postelberger, our first Maglia Rosa, winner of Stage 1, the Austrian rider, Bora Hansgrohe. He is a subject, actually, of tomorrow's Kilometre Zero, the second Kilometre Zero. The first one came out on the rest day. That was A Tale of Two Islands. Episode 2 is Lucas's story, A Day in Pink. And we hear from his mother, his coach, his sports director, and from the man himself. So that comes out. Are they... We're getting the message here that they're
Talking of the Hoover, what's the human Hoover, a.k.a. Lionel Burney, going to eat tonight?
I don't know. I've just enjoyed that arancini. Very nice deep-fried rice ball in the shape of a pear, it was, in fact. And it had some sort of bolognese ragu in the middle.
Mm.
Quite nice. Build a gap.
Tasty.
Surely dinner can only be an hour
beckons,
or so away.
Dinner beckons, yeah.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, yeah. Couple more bits of housekeeping. We put out Giro Extra today, our first Giro Extra. This will be an occasional little treat for friends of the podcast. Sign up as a friend of the podcast at thecyclingpodcast.com. £10 gains you access to all the exclusive friends only material. We've released, I think, 4 friends specials this year, including our look ahead to this Giro and look back at the previous 99 Giri, and our second friends of the podcast special of the Giro will come out on Monday, I think. Monday is the rest day, isn't it? And that's the Stephen Roach story from the 1987 Giro, the story of how he won that. And it's
excellent.
It's good.
Yeah, he's very good, Stephen Roach, isn't he?
That's about it.
Because I've got to go and stick my Panini stickers into
my
album.
Well, you've been doing little else, Lionel.
I'm disappointed so far. I have more swaps than I have stickers stuck in, so I need to maybe take my swaps around the bus.
Okay, well, that's about all for tonight. One other thing, we've got another Cycling Podcast Femina coming soon as well. That will be released fairly imminently. I'm just working on that. It's a conversation with Lizzie Dignan, myself and Orla Chenoui with Lizzie Dignan. So that's all for tonight. Thank you very much, Lionel. The sticker packet
has been opened to predict tomorrow's winner. It will be Caleb Ewan.
Yes, wow. Great chance.
That
great
did,
chance
that did
tomorrow.
Come out last of the part of that packet.
Or it will be Alex Howes.
Okay. I think Caleb Ewan's more likely. But anyway, that's all for tonight. Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, chaps.
A reminder that you can watch the Giro d'Italia live and exclusive on Eurosport and Eurosport Player. UK viewers can also watch highlights of each stage at 10 p.m. on free-to-air channel Quest. There's a special offer for the Eurosport Player, £29.99 for an all-access pass for the rest of 2017. Details of availability, compatible devices and full terms and conditions can be found on the Eurosport Player website, uk.eurosportplayer.com. You've been listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with RAFA. Thanks to them, and thanks to our other sponsors, Science and Sport and Maserati, and to All Press Espresso for supporting our morning show, Kilometre Zero. The music in this episode is by Amara Terra. Thanks to them. Thanks to those who help keep us on the road, in particular David Luxon, Jonathan Rowe, Nick Christian and Simon Gill. And thanks to John Mooney, who produced this episode.
Stop press, Richard, if there's such a thing in audio, because there's some breaking news.
Just as we finished recording the podcast and Daniel scurried away a la Chiro. He's away, but we checked our Twitter feeds, as you do, and it seems that Javier Moreno, the Bahrain rider, has been disqualified. I saw his director sportif, Alberto Volpi, coming out of the race jury meeting room earlier on, looking pretty serious, phone glued to his ear, and I thought it would probably be about that, but I didn't expect such a drastic reaction.
And it does suggest that what Moreno told Chiro either isn't true or hasn't held water. You would think that if there was any credible evidence that Rosa had laid a hand on Moreno first, then Rosa would have been dealt with just as seriously. So we have to assume from the jury's decision that they took exception to Moreno's behaviour. And as the Giro unfolds, that's Nibali losing a teammate unnecessarily, isn't it?
that could be significant, and you know, that will return to that. You'll return to that without me, because I forgot to mention in this episode that this was my last episode before returning home, and then I'll come back out for the final week. So I'll leave it in your and Daniel's very safe hands.
We'll miss you, Buffalo.